already. Those who are not, it's bad. Unfortunate karma. Here we go. Very good. No trouble at all. Oh, they come. Is there any more left in the kitchen? Oh, they all come. No, all gone. Very good. So, I wanted to give the talk today on insight, because so many people, they complain. Ajahn Brahm, you only teach how to calm the mind down. You don't teach insight. And you're not giving us the full teachings. Please, can you tell us how insight comes about through all the stuff you've been teaching us? And today you will find out that what I've been teaching you is insight meditation, because insight is just what happens when you become still. The more still you are, remember I say, the more mindfulness you have, the stronger it becomes. And is one of my old similes, which maybe you can sort of appreciate now, having lived up here for a few days. I was living in Bodhinyana Monastery 7 years. I was living up there. I've now done 31 years. 31 years of my sentence, and I still haven't got parole yet. It's not a sentence. I enjoy being a monk. But there you were, living in that monastery. And every day when I was traveling, I'd always go up and down in a car. Even now, it's really hard for me to actually to walk, even in the evening, to Bodhinyana Monastery. Sometimes people, they come past, Ajahn Brahm, you want to lift? I said, no. But it's raining. No, but we must. And no, I like walking. It's very hard when you're a monk, they won't let you walk anymore. If I am fat, it's not my fault, it's your fault. You say, get in the car. And I say, well, no, you must get in the car. We've got to make good karma. So you don't let me have exercise anymore. And it's true that some people, especially when they've got a car, they want me to sit in their car because they're selling it next week and they put in the advertisement, Ajahn Brahm sit here, an extra $1,000. But anyway, it took 7 years before one day I was coming back from some appointment and I asked the driver, let me out at the bottom of the hill. I want to walk up today. It's a beautiful morning. And after a lot of argument, they let me out of the car. And so, for the first time in 7 years, I walked up the hill where I'd lived for such a long time. And this is where this incident happened. I've told this one before. Many of you may have heard about it, but it's a fascinating idea of how insight happens. When I started walking up that hillside, I could not recognize it. It looked a totally different road than the one I traveled up and down for 7 years. And I couldn't understand what was happening. Why did it look so strange and unrecognizable? I saw things I'd never seen before, details which I had missed, I didn't realize were there. And it was such a strange experience, I just stopped and stared. And as I stopped, the hillside changed again. When I stopped perfectly still, I saw the stream in the bottom of the hillside, the little rocks and the water flowing over those rocks. I saw little flowers in the grass. I saw the beautiful bark of the trees. And I saw so much more, and it became incredibly beautiful. And I was just staring there, just happy, seeing things and beauty which I'd missed before. And I had to get back for lunch, so I carried on walking. And I started reflecting. What has happened there? Why have I been up here for 7 years? I never noticed that before. And then I realized a great simile for insight. When you're traveling in a fast car, looking through the window, your eyes do not have time to see the detail of what's out there beyond the car. The light which hits the back of your eye creates an image, it's a chemical reaction. And it doesn't have time to fill out all the details before that image is dislodged and you have to attend to another image and then another image and another image. The colours aren't fully formed, the detail is not there, it hasn't got time. Because image flows after image so fast. But when I get out of the car and walk, I'm going much slower. So my eye has more time to register a more full, complete image. So when I started walking, I could see much more. And the colours were richer. But nothing could compete with when I stood perfectly still and just watched and gazed. Only then did the chemical reaction on your retina, the back of your eye, have all the time it needed to fill out all the details of the picture and to make all the colours full and rich. Never saw such greens like that before. Just even the sky, the blueness of the sky was deep. Not like washed out, like when you're in a hurry, but deep and rich and beautiful. There were so many colours and so much detail and so much texture, even on the rocks in the valley. You could see everything. It was rich, complete and beautiful, only because my eye had time to fully see, and my mind had enough time to explore that image as much as it wanted. And I realized that why people don't have much insight in life, because we're traveling so fast. What we see is only a fraction of what's out there, and the colors aren't rich. Even what we hear, we only hear a fraction, which is why we misunderstand one another. People say something, we don't hear it, we're going too fast. And even tasting food, so fast, we can't really taste it fully. We go so fast, even our own mind, we cannot understand. It hasn't fully formed. Whatever we see, we go on to the next thing far too fast. Which is one of the reasons why we don't have insights. Why we are confused and deceived by life. You know that sometimes there's people you may have been living with for years. Especially when you get married, but there's so many things to do. You know, to survive in life, go to work, bring up your kids. It's amazing, you've been living together for 20, 30 years and you still don't know each other. You've been going too fast. Just like living life, riding in a car, looking through the window. But now in meditation, you learn how to get out of the car. Stop, go slowly, be still. And just like me walking up a road which I assumed, which I knew, you see so much more. Things which you missed about yourself, your mind, life, your partner, people you love, you see much more of them. And the amazing thing is, which I never expected, what you see is far more beautiful the slower you get. If you go slower with your partner, don't care who they are, they begin to look more beautiful, you appreciate them more. You see more texture and colour in their character. And the same with yourself. When you go slow and just look at yourself, you become far more beautiful than you'd ever expect. You think you know yourself, you don't, you've been moving too fast. You slow down and go still. And that hillside has never looked so beautiful as when I stopped and became still. You look at yourself, you're never so happy, never appreciate yourself so much as when you stop. That is insight. Stillness is the cause of insight. Running around, going fast, stops insight arriving and happening. And you miss so much about life. The strange thing is you assume you know. You assume that this is a hillside, I know that I've been up and down it 1,000 times. You don't know it. If you want to try that out, this is a little exercise. When you go back home after this retreat is finished, I don't know where you live, but you may have always gone into your house or apartment, you know, in public transport or in a car. Try walking down the road. Maybe start 100 meters, 200 meters from your apartment or from your house. and walk up that road. Slowly, give yourself time, and you'll understand what I mean. You'll see things you never knew before, you never thought existed. You'd miss them all, and you'll find they become very beautiful. You missed out on the beauty of where you lived, missed out on enjoying the people you live with, missed out on appreciating yourself, because you've been going too fast. So now you can understand where insight comes from. To be able to see and hear and feel and know, you've got to go much slower. There's just too much information coming in to really deal with. Ajahn Chah used to compare it to the paths in the forest, in the monasteries where we used to live in northeast Thailand. If you've ever gone to those forest monasteries, you will notice they always have paths which are swept every day by the monks, or the nuns, or whoever happens to be there. And when you are sweeping those paths, you know, I was a perfectionist, like many other people. You'd have to sweep every leaf from the path, and then you'd turn around to enjoy the nice clean path you'd just done, and sure enough, one leaf would have fallen right in the middle of that path. Now the way I was trained at school was to go back and sweep that leaf up. The time lapse would leave it. There's enough leaves gone now. One leaf, if you sweep that up, you turn around, another one will fall behind you. It will never be perfectly clean. But what really Ajahn Chah said is, why is it that one leaf which falls on a clean path really stands out? But if a leaf falls into the forest amongst thousands of leaves and twigs, you can't even notice it. And he used that as a simile for insight. How can you understand a leaf and what it means when it's entangled with so many other things? You can hardly notice it. It's too complicated. If you want to understand the nature of a leaf, you have to sweep the path first of all, make it cleaner. When that first leaf falls on the clean path, you can see it clearly. And you can contemplate it. You can understand it. Because it's not complicated by so many other things. And that's the nature of insight. You've got to clean the path first of all. So you haven't got so many complicated things to do. So when a thought, an idea comes up into your mind, an emotion arises, it's isolated, it's not entangled, so you can understand it for what it truly is. Life is fast and complicated, that's why we can't understand it. Got to clean the path first of all. And then when something falls on it, you can see it and understand it. Which is why it's always been the case that we have to make our minds peaceful first of all. There's too much stuff going on to understand anything very clearly. So we have to purify our minds first of all. Purify our minds of the past and the future. You know, sometimes people ask me, Ajahn Brahm, you've never been married. How do you know so much about marriage? You've never gone to work, but how do you go and give all these talks to business schools? There's so much which I've never done, but so much which I understand. How can you do that? And I always love telling the stories as a monk for so many years. You know, sometimes, you know, you get bored teaching retreats again, going to give the same old talks. When it's something new and challenging, I really like that. Like the time some years ago, one of the people who came to our Friday night talks was a radio producer. And so he said, why don't you come to one of these talkback radio shows, which are very popular in many countries. You know, you sit there in the studio and people fire questions at you from the general public. So you have to be very sharp, you haven't got any time to prepare. They ask a question, you're live on air, many hundreds of thousands of people are listening to you. I said, yeah, that'd be really good. And so the only time I could really make it that week was after the Friday night talk at our city centre. And I said, I can make it by 10 o'clock, which was when the programme started. I was late, 10:05, but the news was on, so that was okay. So I rushed into the studio. And if you've ever been on a radio studio, you put the headphones on, You know, the microphone should be just, you know, one hand span away from your nose, so make sure you're close enough. And then getting myself settled in, there was a woman in the seat next to me and the presenter was in the other seat. And they never had a chance to make any introductions because I was late. So he just made the introduction to the general public. Welcome to tonight's program. We are honored to have Ajahn Brahma Wangso, the abbot of Bodhinyana Monastery, and also Dr. Gabriel Morrissey, the author of many books on sex. And I got started. I said, what? What program am I on? And welcome to the adult show. And it was on adult themes. It was on when people from the general public rang up to ask questions on sexual dysfunction, you know, marriage, relationship, all the intimate stuff. And I thought, God, what am I into? I've got to ask questions on this. And imagine inviting a monk, you know, been celibate for 40 years onto an adult show. But, you know, I think, this is really good. Let's give this a try, see what happens. And you can always make up something. And it was true. The next 2 hours, I mean, there was breaks for news bulletins and stuff. For the next 2 hours, you know, all the people, the audience, had an opportunity they could ask a question of either Dr. Gabriel Morrissey or myself. And they were always asking the question of the monk. And this expert on sex, she hardly said a word throughout the whole 2 hours. Ajahn Brahm was the expert. And afterwards I wondered, why is that? Why is that the case? And it is because when you have insight into one thing, you have insight into the whole lot. Now, remember, I think I mentioned that story when I gave the talk in Hong Kong on, was it Buddhism, sex, family and money? And why on earth did you invite me to give a talk on that? It's because I'm the expert. Simply because it's just about the psychology of the mind. And you get insight. When you get insight into anything. When you see clearly, you just see the nature of the human being. When the one leaf falls on the path, you don't just understand one leaf, you understand all leaves. This is a great power of insight. But the most important thing is to make sure the insight comes from stillness, not through thinking. Because if you think, you always tend to get the wrong answers, just the answers which everybody else has given. You cannot be intuitive. And a lot of times, I always say this, and there's these books around now, the wisdom which comes from silence. That is the wisdom which I'm trying to encourage. That is the insight. You actually feel the answers to the problems of your life. And hopefully, on a retreat like this, you'll understand how powerful that is. Even if you're a student doing examinations, there was one disciple, she was in Melbourne, and she was a Sri Lankan girl. She learned her meditation when she lived in Sri Lanka as a young kid, and she was really good at it. So when she was doing a medical degree at Monash, was it Monash or was it, I think it was a Melbourne uni. When she was doing her med school at Melbourne uni, she hardly ever went to any lectures. Missed most of the tutorials, but always came top, won all the prizes, and graduated with first class honours from the med school at Melbourne University. And she told me how she did that. All she needed to do was to make her mind perfectly peaceful and still when she read the books, and she could recall them. And most importantly, she said, when she did the exams, she just read very peacefully, read the question, and the first answer which came into her mind, she just wrote it down. She didn't think. She just let the answer come. She said it was always the correct answer, and she did incredibly well. In fact, you know, so well, she never actually took it any further to become a doctor. She just, you know, carried on meditating. That was the love of her life. But it just showed what can be done. And those of you who remember examinations, how many times is it? Has it been for you? You've read the question, you get the answer, comes out, no, that can't be right. And you start thinking about it. We don't trust the wisdom born of silence. But the wisdom born of silence, that is real insight. And you will find in your life it's nearly always correct. And also, it's more innovative. Unfortunately, these days that people are so well trained in thinking, they cannot be that creative and innovative, which is one of the reasons why they don't become very employable. In today's world, where there's such a need for competitive edge, you do have to be innovative. You have to be unique. You have to be able to get answers which no one else can get. Insight can do that for you. One lady, actually, if you go by to one of the Bodhi trees there, you see her name on the Bodhi tree. She died some years ago. Her name was Waninat. And you may have seen her little tree down there, some little Bodhi tree. But anyway, that she came on a retreat many years ago, and she was a senior social worker. Her job was to sign the forms, yes, take the children away from this parent because they're not capable of looking after their kids. That's a huge thing to do, you know, to take a child away from their mum, because their mum is a drug addict, or the mum, you know, hasn't got enough money to look after them. And she had to make those decisions. They're some of the toughest decisions a person could make. So it was a very high-stress job. And as usual, when it came to the Friday night when the retreat started, she was late. She never came till about midnight, trying to finish off all the loose ends. And the first couple of days, like I've told you, rest, relax, sleep a lot, which she did. And then she started getting into her meditation. And she told me that there was, even though you try and tie up all loose ends, you can't tie up all the loose ends. There's always stuff which you've left back in Hong Kong and Jakarta you couldn't finish. But she was smart enough, she'd learned her meditation, she never even thought about those problems which still lay on her office desk, waiting for her when she returned, when the retreat was finished. She never even thought about them. But she said she was meditating in the middle of the retreat, she got very peaceful and calm, and all these solutions, they just bubbled up, they just came to her. She never was thinking about it, they just came to her. And when she finished her meditation, she wrote them down, put them in the drawer, forget about them until the retreat was over, and then she implemented them all. She told me they were brilliant solutions. The sort of answers she could never get by thinking. She could be thinking, worrying for hours, even days, and never get close to the wisdom of those answers. She began to trust that even in your worldly life, in your business, you know, in whatever you have to do in life, in the decisions you have to make, sometimes, I should not say sometimes, nearly all the time, if you can just be silent and allow the wisdom to come to you, it is the best possible way. It's the rising of insight into the ordinary things of life. And certainly that's what I do in my life. You know, sometimes people are surprised when I say how busy I am. How many responsibilities I have. I always recall giving a talk in Singapore in the harbour front, a big convention. There's about 3,000 people for this talk. And at the end of the talk, you know, went on till 10:30, 11 o'clock. When it came to question time, this young man came to the microphone and he said, "It's all very well what you've been saying, Ajahn Brahm, but you're a monk. You don't have the stress which we have. You know, you live a nice, easy, simple life." And I wasn't going to stand for that. So I got on the microphone. And I described what I'd been doing that very day, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, doing some work for the monastery, and then, even though I was over in Singapore, and then the first thing, the breakfast, it's not just a breakfast, yeah, I gave counseling and blessings and try and cheer people up, and try and make jokes about the food they're giving me just to make them happy, and then from that time on it's right throughout the day without any rest. And I said, now it's, you know, 10 o'clock, you know, I've been going for, was it about 18 hours? And he said, and that's my day. What do you mean that, you know, I don't know how to work hard? And he was quite stunned at how much work I get done in a day. And he came to the microphone again and said, "Wow, I never realized how much work and responsibility a monk has." He said, "Then I always wanted to become a monk one day, but not now." Stupid monk, I missed it. But it's not the amount of work you do, it's actually how you do it. And this is one of the skills which I use to have to make decisions, important decisions, which affect many people, to learn how to be still and let the answer come to you. Our problem, as you know, we think so much, we worry so much, we can't let the future go, which means that we can never get that type of insight. So the least of very stillness, no past, no future, being this present moment, be still, and then solutions to problems can come. I like emphasizing that, because many people, they think, because they assume that's the only way they can find answers to real important problems. You've got to get a solution to that problem. You can't just abandon those responsibilities, and it's your kids, it's your health, it's your family. You have to do something. Ajahn Brahm, why do you mean I don't think about it? This is important. This is life and death. So if it really is important, if it really is life and death, shut up and be still. And then let the answer come to you. The best answers come from stillness, never from worrying about them. That is that powerful insight, and it gives you an understanding why I've been training you to do what you do here. To be quiet, be in this moment, stop thinking, let things be, and the answer to those problems, they come to you very, very clearly. One little leaf falls in the clear path, and you can understand it very easily. You get great vision that way. So that is actually insight into the worldly stuff of life. But the other insights into the religious parts of life, that's even far, far more important. And there's little insights which you get from this practice of meditation. In number one, how to meditate. There are hundreds of different ways to meditate, and I'm sure everyone in this room always gets confused. You come and listen to Ajahn Brahm, it makes so much sense. Oh, now I learn how to meditate. And next week you go to another monk and he teaches you something totally different and contradictory. And then you go to a nun and it's another thing. And then you read it in a book, you see it on the internet. Life is so confusing. Why can't these monks, nuns and the internet all sit down together, work it all out and agree with one another? And so sometimes, how do you know which is the best way to meditate? Which is the best way to practice? And so I developed a little simile. It's called the simile of the Scottish mist, coming from an experience of my youth. I loved spending many, many months of my vacations up in Scotland, because it was the nearest wilderness to London or Cambridge where I lived. I'd take a tent and go walking and camping by myself, having some beautiful, peaceful times. But I also just remember once staying at a youth hostel in the very north of Scotland, and with the warden of the hostel, who was a local man, we decided to go and have a walk up one of the mountains on a beautiful sunny day. So we were walking up there, having a good time, and we got to the top of the mountain with breathtaking views, sat down, had another chat, and I saw another mountain not far away. I said, "Let's walk up to that summit too." And he said, "No, I've had enough, I'm going back." So I went there by myself, which is, whenever you're doing any trekking or climbing, never go by yourself, because it's always dangerous. Especially when the days of no mobile phones. Anything happened to me, they wouldn't find me for days. But nevertheless, I went off, and this hostel manager, that he was wrong, he should not have never allowed me to do that. But it looked okay, it was a nice sunny day, so I walked up to the top of the next mountain. Just before I got to the top, clouds appeared from nowhere. and they descended over the mountain, and I was totally enveloped in this mist, and I could hardly see the hand in front of my if I held my hand out, you could only just see it. That's how thick the mist was. And at first, you know, you probably like me think, oh, it doesn't really matter. You have a sense of direction. I just turn around, retrace my steps and go down and find my way out. But later on I discovered I wasn't retracing my steps, even though I thought I was going around in circles. That's what happens in mists. You think you have your direction, but you're lost. And I'm not just talking about women who can't find their directions. Men are just as bad, even worse. So, I was walking around and I was very lucky because I came across a cliff. I was one step from going over the edge, and there would be no Ajahn Brahm. And it was a very deep, and actually I found out later on when I checked up the maps, that cliff was in totally the opposite direction I thought I was walking in. And that really scared me. I realized I was lost. And this was dangerous. And I had heard tales of these mists lasting for days, and people wandering around with no food and water, and eventually getting hypothermia, and just getting either very sick or dying. You're totally lost, and this was wilderness area. But I decided to actually to use insight. A very simple insight. I knew the mist was only on the high part of the mountain. If I could somehow find my way down, I'd get below the mist and could get my directions again. I could see again. So how could I find my way down? Find a little stream. Because my education in theoretical physics at Cambridge taught me that water always goes downhill. Simple. And so I just found a little stream and I followed that stream. Not going left, right, and if it went round in circles, I'd go round in circles. Follow that stream because I knew that every step I followed the stream, I'd go down, 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 down. Obviously the stream grew bigger as it went further down. And eventually I came underneath the mist. And I could see again. Could see where they get my directions and then go back to the hostel. And that's how I managed to get out of that difficult situation. And I've used that as a simile, you know, for meditation, for your spiritual life, for Buddhism. What path should you follow in Buddhism? There's so many different teachings. There's Mahayana, there's Vajrayana, there's Theravada, there's so many different parts of Theravada, the forest tradition, this tradition, that tradition. What tradition should I take? Help! Find a stream. As long as it's going downhill, you know you're going in the correct direction. As long as you're becoming more peaceful, more happy, more mindful, you're going in the correct direction. So, carry on. Soon you get underneath the mist. And in this simile, underneath the mist means actually seeing the Dhamma, becoming a stream winner. You know where you are now. You know which way to go. It's very simple. But to get to that point where you can see the Dhamma for yourself, follow the stream which increases what the Buddha called the wholesome qualities. So if you do any type of meditation or any type of practice which makes you more angry, that's not following the right stream. That's going the opposite direction. I don't care what practice it is. If it makes you more of a pain in the ass, stop it. And sometimes you know that from your friends when you go back home. And if they say, oh, you're worse than when you left Hong Kong, then don't ever come here again. But if when you go back, you're a more peaceful, happier, content, more of a gentle, more of a Buddhist, then you know you've been practicing in the correct direction. Well done, carry on. That is insight. It's not the great ideas which come up, the flashes. Now I know the meaning of life. Now I can see everything. And you go and write a book about it. That's not insight. Insight, you know that because it changes your character. Where before you were angry, now you are tolerant. Where before you were afraid, oh no, it doesn't really matter. Where before you were just so held back by the pain of the past, now you can just let it go and enjoy your life. If that is what's happening, you're on the path. Carry on. That is insight. Not these flashes of, it's all one. Yes, now I see. That is not what insight means. Insight is what changes your heart, your character. Less greed, less hatred, more easy to share, less fear. Everything becomes a much more peaceful, happy life. That is insight. Carry on. And hopefully you can actually experience that in this meditation retreat. Sometimes people think, oh, these meditation retreats run by Ajahn Brahm, he should be stricter. We should have MPs, meditation police. And every time they see you talking, 50 lashes. Well, you would keep noble silence that way, but would that be developing insight, or would you just be more afraid? We could have strict routine. Get up 4 o'clock in the morning. If you're not up at 4 o'clock, we all get up at 3 o'clock the next day. Now the trouble with that, yes, you actually just have more discipline, but far less insight. Because insight is a personal thing. You have to understand why you want to get up, why you want to go to sleep. That's more important than anything else. And if you have those strict retreats, you maybe think you've achieved something, but you haven't learnt anything. People learn much more when you trust them, rather than acting out of fear. Yeah, you will make mistakes, but in Buddhism, mistakes are where we learn from. So I, years ago, I had the insight to get the 70% rule, which I love teaching. When I was a school teacher, after finishing university, just for 1 year teaching maths, and had to set my first examination in maths, didn't know what to do, went to a senior teacher, asked for advice. He told me, don't make the exam too easy. If everyone gets 95 or 100%, the examination has no meaning at all. It's a waste of time for everybody. If you make it too hard, so everyone gets about 30-40%, then that'll be even worse. They will lose their motivation. They will come away thinking, I can't do maths. He said, try to aim for 70% score. Because if the average score is 70%, nearly all the kids in your class will come away thinking, yes, I can do maths. It gives them confidence. But also the 30% where they make mistakes, that's where I as their teacher can find out their weak points. So the next lessons I can address those weak points to improve their ability in maths. So that's how you set exams. And I adapted that to life. If you only score 30%, 40%, you get very depressed. Think you're hopeless, and maybe just even give up on life. If you only score 100% in life, whatever you do is always successful. You're always just top of the class, you always make millions of dollars, whatever happens in life, if you never make any mistakes at all, what purpose is there for life? It's got no meaning for you. But 70% is the best score in life. It means you're motivated, you're doing well, well done. And the 30% where you fail, yes. That is where you get insight. That is where you learn. That is where you grow. Not on what works, but on the little failures you have and the disappointments. That is where you grow. So that's a beautiful insight for your life. And you apply that to so many different areas of life. If you've got a husband who's only 70%, you're so lucky, keep him. If you've got a wife who's 100%, you'll never learn anything from her, dump her. G- Because you don't learn anything if your husband is just so sweet and kind and really nice all the time and just really rich and lets you do whatever you want, whenever you want to do it. What are you going to learn from that? A little bit of mistakes. That is where you learn in life. And that is actually a great little insight into life. So in meditation, have you always got into jhana every meditation? 70% of the time, please? That doesn't matter. Whenever it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. You're learning a lot there. And that also reminds me of the story, because sometimes, especially when a person gets a good meditation, they always want to get a good meditation afterwards. And that reminds me of one of my favourite stories. You know, I invent jokes sometimes, and I'm very, very happy that, you know, you get on the internet and people send you jokes. And have you ever wondered where those jokes come from? Who was the first one who actually made up that joke? And there's a few of them I made up. So it's great when it comes around and you see it, but yeah, that's my one. But one of the jokes I made up is from a meditation about the fellow. Okay, let's make it topical. The fellow from mainland China who gets a job, no, from the countryside, gets a job in Hong Kong in the construction industry as a labourer on one of the building sites. And he works really hard on Monday, really, really hard. At the end of the day, he goes home and his wife says, "How do you do today?" He said, "I worked really hard. How much did you make?" He said, "Nothing. The boss never even paid me anything and I worked so hard all day." And so he goes the next day, same thing happens. The third day, he works all day on Wednesday, doesn't get anything. And he goes home and says, "It's a waste of time working in Hong Kong, they don't pay you." And I said, "Oh, come on, carry on. They may pay you on Thursday." So he works really hard on Thursday and again, doesn't get paid at all. He said, "I'm giving this up." And his wife says, "Well, you've got nothing else to do on Friday, you might as well go to work." So he goes to work on Friday, not expecting anything, because he's got nothing else to do. And on Friday, the boss gives him a big pay packet. And he goes home to his wife and says, "Darling, I've finally figured out how it works in Hong Kong. From now on, I'm only going to go to work on Friday." You all know it. You get paid on Friday for all the work you've done Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They don't pay you every day. Just like your meditation, you get the paycheck. For all the other meditations, you never get paid at all. Meditating, 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 meditating. Getting nowhere, and then suddenly you come in here and you meditate, and it all comes together. You get a payday. And you think, "Great, now I know I'm on payday every meditation." It doesn't work like that. So sometimes you just got to put the work in. You know, put the hours in, sitting down, meditating, until eventually the paycheck comes. These are all insights into the nature of how meditation works. But when it does work, you reflect. What did you do? Which worked this time? And it's always really nice being a teacher, because I get all the feedback from others. Especially when they get a good meditation. They come up to me and said, "Oh, Ajahn Brahm, it's a really good meditation." And I always like asking, why? What happened this time, which was different than all the other times? You had a very good meditation. And especially the deep meditations, when I started teaching jhanas and the first few people came up and said, "Yeah, I got a jhana, and it was a real jhana." I asked them, "What did you do this time? What was so special? What was the trick which you hadn't done before, which meant you got a jhana this time?" And they all said the same thing, so much so I never ask anymore. They say, "For the first time, I really let go. For the first time, I really let go. For the first time, I really let go." Now, can you let go yet? Now you get insight into what we mean by letting go. If you could really understand what we meant by letting go and do it, you get into jhanas almost immediately. It just happens, it's nature. And at last, you understand what this letting go is. And you can't understand that unless you have the experience. You can talk about it, you can write books about it, you can do all sorts of stuff about it. But until you find that letting go button and actually press it, you don't know what this meditation is all about. And it's so easy. You can be practicing for years, doing this and doing that and doing something else. And all you ever need to do is just those two words, let go. Powerful. But instead of just, I should really do that, I'm a bad teacher, I should have just come the first morning, Saturday morning, just sat here and say, let go, that's all the talks you're going to get for the whole week. And just do it. But unfortunately you keep needing to brainwash people. That's all I've been doing on this retreat, brainwash, 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 until I get into your heads. And sometimes people say that. I remember this one lady on the last retreat which I gave here, because one of the similes of letting go is I say, imagine you're driving in a car, you've got your hands on the wheel in a busy Hong Kong traffic, or even worse, in Jakarta traffic. And you're going along at 100 kilometers an hour. Actually, you never go 100 kilometers an hour in Jakarta, there's far too much traffic. But imagine you're going 100 kilometers an hour down the road, and you're sitting next to Ajahn Brahm in busy traffic, and Ajahn Brahm says to you, take your hands off the steering wheel. Would you do that? Because that's what you need to do in meditation. Take your hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals, and let the car do the driving. And I've given that simile so often, and I've brainwashed so many people. This lady, she came to me in the interview and said she had a dream the night before. She was driving in a car, really fast. I was sitting next to her, and they came to a cliff, a vertical cliff. And instead of putting on the brakes, I told her in the dream, take your hands off the steering wheel. Take your feet off the pedals, don't brake. And she said in the dream, she'd been so brainwashed by me, she did that in the dream. Took her hands off the steering wheel, feet off the pedals, and went right over the edge of the cliff. And as they were hurtling down to the death at the end of the cliff, she noticed there was a road at the bottom of the cliff with a very sharp right turn. Should I grab the wheel? I said, no, let go. That's what she heard. And when she hit the bottom of the cliff, the car automatically swerved to the right and went safely along the road at the bottom of the cliff. And I said, yes, at last I've got into your head. That is what happens. You think it's impossible. If I don't take control, you're going to crash and die. But it doesn't work that way in meditation. You have that trust. Let go of your fear. And you just go into these incredibly peaceful, beautiful states of meditation. That's the truth of the matter. But remember, that's only a simile. Don't do that when you've got a real car. It's only a simile. And that way you can learn how to let go. And you get the insight into how to meditate. And that's one of the greatest things. And when you get the insight into how to meditate, the rest of the stuff all comes along really, really easy. All of the Four Noble Truths and Anicca Dukkha Anatta, the three characteristics. The Four Noble Truths. Basic Buddhism. What the heck is that all about? When you get very peaceful in meditation, you get so happy and free. Why? I've already mentioned the bliss of these meditations. Better than sexual orgasm, better than heroin. This is high happiness. Why? The only reason is because a big mass of suffering has vanished. Just like you've been carrying these heavy rocks on your back. You've got a ball and chain on each of your legs. And you're climbing up this mountain of treacle. In the hot weather. What else can we make to make it more difficult? And that's what life is like sometimes. Climbing up this mountain of treacle. It's really hard to get a hand going. Just climb up it and you've got all these weights behind you. Life is such a struggle. And then you let go of the backpack with all the heavy weights in it. You untie the balls and chains. Instead of mountain of treacle, you find the elevator. and you go inside the lift. Oh, so free and so easy when you've let go. And that's what it feels like. You've let go of a lot of suffering. I don't know why people keep worrying about their past. You don't have to. Yeah, you've messed up your life. You've had abortions. You've gone to prison. I don't care what you've got up to. Even Angulimala could let it go. 999 people he killed. You ask any modern psychologist and he would have to be in therapy for the rest of his life with a trauma of murdering 999 people. Did he have to go through therapy? Nah, just let it go. He could do it. Why can't you? So you learn how to let go of suffering. You have happiness. You understand just some of the Four Noble Truths. Craving, attachment, is the cause of suffering. And no one makes you do that. You only do it because you think you should. You can let it go. Anytime. I even say the hell realms. The hell realms are prisons whose doors are always open. You can walk out anytime you like. The door's open. Just push it and it'll open. You can walk out. You just need to let go and forgive yourself. And realize, you know, one of the greatest insights is realize I don't need to punish myself. I don't need to feel guilty. I don't need to be in prison. I can walk out. And you do. And you're free. Suffering ends. Not just past and future. And then the suffering of your body. I'm getting old now. When I was, where's Davies? You're not here today. When I was in Bhutan recently, I celebrated my 750th birthday. Absolutely true. Monks, I can't lie. Do you believe me? I was 750 when I was in Bhutan in February. February the 7th, 750 months since I was born. I don't lie. Sometimes when people say their age, they always want to lessen it. As a monk, I want to build it up a bit more, because the older I am, you know, the more sort of inspiring you are as a monk or a nun. If I say my real age, I'm 62 going on to 63. That's not impressive. You know, but when you say 750, people say, wow, awesome, really? 750, wow. But even at 62 and a bit, you still start to get aches and pains in the body. This body is just so difficult. But in the meditations, the body vanishes. It's so wonderful. No heat, no cold, no aches, no pains. The whole thing is gone. Bye-bye, five senses. And it's so blissful being free of the body. One of the great insights you get if you get to that deep in the meditation, an obvious insight, your body is gone, five senses are stopped in the deep meditations, and you're having a wonderful time. And you realize that when your body really does die, and the five senses stop full on at death, such a wonderful experience. One of the insights you get from direct knowledge when you get these deep meditations, you're no longer going to be afraid of death. You understand what it's like. What is death anyway? Dropping your body, five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, stopping. That's what death is. And you're doing it when you're still alive. You're practicing, finding out what it's like. Would you like to know what it's like to die? Would you get into deep meditation? And you're testing it out. You know, sometimes, you know, you can actually take a car for a test drive before you have to buy it. This is like taking death for a test drive before you have to commit. That's what it's like. And you think, wow, this is so peaceful and happy. Death is not suffering. Dying is the suffering part. The process. Once you get there, it's fine. So straight away you don't have any fear anymore. That's one of the great insights you get from this meditation. You understand what it's like for the body to vanish and the five senses to stop. But the best insights come next. When there is something else starts to vanish. Not just the body and the five senses. The next thing which vanishes is the deep insights. When you start to vanish, who do you think you are? One of the places where you think you are is your will, your choice. How many of you have the assumption that you chose to come on this retreat? Did you choose to come here? Or did you have no choice? You had to come here. Was it your choice? You all know Buddhism, there is no one in here, there is no self. So who made the decision to come here? This will, this controller, this things which runs your life, what is it? Are you the will? Are you in charge? That's what you assume. And that's why you'll always get reborn and suffer. Once, this is an old simile of mine, once there was a little tadpole. And the little tadpole grew up in a lake in a monastery. And that little tadpole, she was a very smart little tadpole. She went first of all to primary school and then to high school, where she majored in chemistry, where she learned from her chemistry teacher that water is H2O. Later in the lake, in the pond, she went to university, where she did lots of experiments and knew even the atomic composition, how the water molecule is actually all ties together. And eventually the little tadpole became a professor of water. And because it was in a monastery, she also learned the Abhidhamma on the nature of water. But even though that little tadpole had studied everything there was to know about water, how could a tadpole really understand what water is? It can't know water no more than a fish can know what water is. You're born in water, lived all your life in water. Water surrounds you every second of your life. How can you understand it? But one day, little tadpole, she develops little arms and legs. She's becoming a frog. And once she becomes a frog, she jumps outside of the lake for the first time in her life. And standing on dry land, she notices something is missing. Something which has always been there has gone. Water. Only now can the frog know what water was. That strange thing which has vanished. You little tadpoles. You've been growing little legs and arms, getting into deep meditation, until one day those legs and arms are big enough to take you into the jhana. And in the jhana, you're out of the lake, and something is missing. Something which has always been there, and now it's gone. You, your will. Choice, sankharas. And now, for the first time in your life, you realize you were not the one who made the choices. And this controller, this doing, this effort is nothing to do with you. In fact, it is a big bunch of suffering. You realize it's like you've been born in a prison. Spend all your life in a prison and you don't realize you're in prison. You find a nice boy in prison and marry him. And have a lovely family, nice little babies in the prison. And if you do very well, you get a nice job in the prison and make lots of money and visit other parts of the prison. And some parts of the prison, they've got nice resorts, but it's still in the prison. And you do very well in life. You get degrees in prison and you get accolades, you get made sir or knights or whatever inside your prison, and you think, oh, prison is a nice place because you don't know anything else except out of prison. And there's a little guard in the prison who never lets you sit still. never gives you a moment of rest, even on meditation, always saying, come and do something, get up, sit, watch the breath, do something. That is the prison guard called will. Never lets you be still for a moment. Always makes you do things. And then one day, you find a secret door in the prison called Eightfold Path. And you go through that door, and you find on the other side, you're outside of prison. The five prison walls of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, you're outside. There is no five senses, there is no body, and there is no will. You're free. Only now do you understand you were born in prison, spent all your life in prison, and never realized it was prison, never understood dukkha. Craving, will, keeps you in prison. Let go of craving. Let go of will. Be still. And you are free. Hopefully you understand why I teach meditation this way. Doing stuff just makes your will stronger. You never escape from the prison. You don't feed the will. You subdue it. Let it be. Until it vanishes. And when you're still, then you see things as they truly are. Then you're free. Peace at last. And all these things you thought you understood, you realize you hadn't understood them at all. When the will stops, when you're out of the lake, now you understand what the Buddha taught. And you understand why this method of meditation is the only way you can get inside. To get so out of prison, you realize what prison is. So the doors of the deathless are open. Prison gates are unlocked. Get out. By doing nothing. Shh. Be still. And see the Dhamma. Da da da. Okay, enough, I've gone over time as usual. So that's my little talk on insight. So it's easy. Just let go of the wheel of the car, let go of the pedals, and just sit here and do nothing. Easy. Can you do that? No, you can't. You know, all the habits of the past. But anyway, one day you will. One day you'll sit here and give up and press the letting go button, do absolutely nothing. Really let go. Oh, I'm just going to sit here and do nothing. And then.